welcome to the January 19th edition of the PFF Forecast. It is division, whatever the hell it is. It's decision.
It's the division desk.
Yeah. It is the decision desk. We're going to talk about the divisional matchups. We also have a very special target take of the week. And who knows, maybe I'll spontaneously remember to do a recommendation segment. You just never know what will happen, but it's going to be a great episode. Let's rock. All right. We are in this interesting part of the NFL cycle, right? Mm-hmm. Because we've got 8 teams left.
Yeah.
They're playing a game. And every other team is in a totally different world, right? They're in Cabo / the draft room. And there are a ton of vacancies from a head coaching perspective. There are a ton of GM positions that are open. And then at the same time, it's like we've got these 4 really awesome games. Yeah. So apparently the target take of the week this week has to do with the former.
Yeah. I've been asked a few times, like, what do I think about GM candidate A, B, C?
And I'm this is just a humble brag.
Yeah.
I didn't know this. I came in here, context for the listeners. I came in here. And Eric was like, I have a great rant for you. And he knows how to get to me, right? Because I hear great rant and immediately, you know, it moves for me. And little did I know, this was just a humble brag.
And like, I have to say, no, because it's not. It's a humble brag.
Okay.
The humble squared brag.
Yeah.
Because like, I got to say, I've met a few of these people who are interviewing. We know, like, for example, Kwesi has been very, Adolfo Mensa has been very fun to talk to over the years.
I'd hire him in a second.
But the fact is like, we don't know, like, we know almost nothing about him. And like, and you see like ink spilled. Like, I've had to mute so many, like, I used to follow these like team accounts to get injury information and stuff for betting and all that. I've had to mute like every freaking one of them because it's like ranking general manager candidates. And it's like, we have a hard enough time in football attributing blame when we have sufficient data on the field for shit, right? Like, the idea that, like, you know, people would, and again, I'm not singling, this is a neutral statement about all of these men and women. The idea that, like, we know about, like, how good Ryan Poles is by, like, the Chiefs drafting or free agent signing is absurd.
It's so bananas.
How freaking, like, ridiculous is that? And I again, like, we just have to, like, you have to calm down a little bit. And I also think it's interesting. Like, to me, I think we should be taking this time to talk about ideal team building strategies and not people, because, and again, this is a people business, but we should be talking about, okay, should you have a scout in this position? Should you have an analytics person in this position? Should you have a cap person in this position? What kind of structure should you have? Do you ask this person, hey, like, you know, I've asked this question a lot of people in the league. It's like, okay, how much does the general manager's evaluation go into the drafting of a player? And some teams will say, very little. They delegate, which I agree, that's what you should do. You should have decision makers, and then you should have evaluators, and the decision makers should be the evaluator of the evaluators. But then there's some who are like, it's a huge deal. His evaluation is a huge deal, which to me strikes me as just extremely wasteful. Mm-hmm. Like, to me, we shouldn't even be talking about, you know, sort of who's on the block or not. We should be asking who's hiring. What are you looking for? Because to me, that would be a much bigger signal of who's going to do well than any of these candidates.
Yeah, and luck.
I mean, sure, luck is a big part of it.
And that's one of the really interesting things about how people get put into the spotlight, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, where are all these potential GM candidates coming from? Or head coaching candidates. They are people within successful organizations. I really have a hard time believing that the only people that have done good work are the people at organizations that have made the playoffs in the past.
Well, yes, exactly.
That is fucking bananas. I'm sorry. I apologize for swearing. But like, how absurd is that? You're telling me, you mean to tell me, now, in fairness, Kwezi is awesome, right?
Yeah, we, sure. We like him. We're rooting
for
him. We like
him a lot.
Yeah. And as a person.
As a person, absolutely. Yeah. For me to say that I have any idea how good of a job he's doing or what he's even doing, and then to say, oh yeah, that makes him the ideal candidate. And the same is true of Ryan Poles, who's been in the news today a bunch. Why are the why is Ryan Poles in the news? Ryan Poles is in the news literally because Patrick Mahomes was drafted by the Chiefs.
Yeah, and they've had good drafts and bad drafts, and I would hate for him to get to not have an opportunity because people are attributing the bad drafts to him. Just the same way that I think it's a little weird that people are attributing all the good success to him. And then, you know, are they not attributing it to other people in that building, et cetera, et cetera? And I agree with you. I think that there's and we know this. So, you know, we have context within the people in our league through our B2B stuff and all this stuff. And like, we know.
Well, they're all listeners of the show. Shout out to all of you out there. We love you.
Love you guys. But then the thing is again, we get an idea. But to me, the more of an idea, like every time I sort of peel back the onion a little bit, I get an idea that this person's really good, and maybe he or she doesn't have as big of an influence on the situation as I thought, right? So like we watch the funniest one is like sort of we watch like a team go for it on fourth down, and then everybody on Twitter is like, oh look, you know,
analytics person.
This is the influence of so and so analytics person, and I'd hate for it to be the other side and to have a coach who is not like, for example, there's a high profile coach who struggled this weekend making decisions, and I know for a fact.
Don't talk about. We said the Kyle Shanahan shade would stop.
Yeah. But there are people. I know for a fact that there are smart people working for his team. I know for a fact. Yeah. And so, like, we're not. To me, I think it's like, oh, are we going to poo-poo them? No. It's the way the organization's structured. It's also the fact that when the heat is on, these decision makers, they become evaluators, and that, you know, again, it's part of the process that I get worried about.
So this is interesting. I'm really glad you brought up this topic because one of the things that I am spending the majority of my time, people wonder what we do for our day jobs. Let me tell you what
I podcast.
Let me tell you what I've done for like 90% of my time over the past however many weeks is think about and or interview and or evaluate the interviews and or talk about potential candidates to hire. And it's such an interesting conversation, right? Because you go, okay, I spent 45 minutes with this person on Zoom. I talked to another colleague who spent 45 minutes with this person on Zoom. And you go, did you like him? You know, and it's a fucking crapshoot. Now, okay, so then spin that forward. So in my mind, how am I thinking about those candidates? You know what one of the number one things that people look for? They look for, where have they worked in the past? And do I respect what that company did? If they're, you know, younger in their career, where did they go to school? Do I respect that school? Now, I think that's largely gone away, thankfully. And mostly it's about like, what have you done? But it's hard to know what people have done. And so you just default to, did this person work at X company?
Yeah.
And
or more sinisterly, this is why you get, you know, discrimination and things like that. Does the person remind me of me is oftentimes how this ends up happening.
Yes.
And you know, you have to guard against
that. Let's assume good intentions, right? Because like someone that is doing that is an idiot. But like I notice it even in myself, right? You're looking at the resume, you're trying to validate this person.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with teams where, look, when I hire somebody, and I introduce them to the company and I introduce them to our team, they're going to go, okay, well, what's this guy's story?
Yeah.
And if I go, so-and-so worked here, and they go, oh, that's a really successful company, this guy must be legit, then because I need that good faith going forward. Those are the fans. So when an owner goes, I'm going to introduce this person to my fan base to lead our team, and they go, the fans are dumb. Yeah. They're going to be like, oh, this guy was a part of a team that went 6-10 last year? Yeah. You fucking idiot.
But the interesting thing is like,
I swore again.
Yeah, and just for, and we are hiring, as George said, yes, last week. One of the things, I'm just going to bring this person up. He was on our live watch long Monday. It's different. Like when I take somebody like Tay Seth to be like an intern, mm-hmm, I've actually seen him do public analytics work. It actually takes some of the uncertainty out when I can just look at him and say, oh, here's an example of his work. And it's very, he's doing it for himself and it's very concentrated. And obviously, for example, if you want a job at PFF, that probably is the best way to do it. But like the teams by their nature, like you're not seeing Ryan Poles is not showing you his work. Right. When he makes his vote for who the Chiefs number one overall pick or number one draft pick is, you don't see that. You just see the end result of Brett Veach's decision or Andy Reid's decision. And so, again,
how would you validate that? Because I'll tell you what I do. I go and try and find people that can tell me about how that person has worked.
Yeah.
That they don't know about. Right. It's not I don't go, hey, give me a list of recommendations. It's a back channel. But isn't that hard to do with teams?
Well, right, because
because you're competing against them.
Right. Well, that's the thing, and like, yeah, there's that, and there's also the. So I think about it this way, and you know, part of it is also the way that the league is structured too, right? So like, take Eric Bieniemy, the Eric Bieniemy thing for head coach. I know we're mixing head coach and offensive play call and all that stuff. But Bieniemy is a good example too, because a lot of people are like, oh, he doesn't call plays, so he couldn't be a good head coach. Even though being a good head coach is maybe less about being able to call plays and more about being able to lead men. But like, why? One of the reasons he hasn't gotten an opportunity is because the Chiefs have been playing, and also the Chiefs have been playing into February for the last 3 years. And so, like, I remember, and this is another example of Andy Reid's staff. But
how do you bring everything fucking back to the
Chiefs? This is Eagles. So when Brad Childress got hired, everybody wanted Brad Childress for years, mm-hmm, right? Childress only got his head coaching job because the Eagles, McNabb tore his ACL and the Eagles missed the playoffs.
Right.
And so he got hired in that window. You think about Mike McCarthy, the year before he became the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, he was the San Francisco 49ers mm-hmm offensive coordinator, mm-hmm, and they were one of the worst offenses in football. And again, we talk about who he is now, but Mike McCarthy was a pretty good head coach for a sequence of time. And like, I look at, for example, here's the name that came up, and I look back and I'm like, what the hell? This is Jonathan Gannon, the defensive coordinator for the Eagles. Now, I look at a lot of KPIs and stuff, and I just think the Eagles defense is, I wouldn't say poorly coached, but unimaginative. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, why would the Houston Texans interview this guy? Why would so-and-so interview this guy? And I take a step back and I'm like, well, is he going to call plays when he's head coach? I don't know. Is he a good motivator? Did he get more out of do his players like him? Like, there are a number of things that go beyond the play calling. And so I take a step back and I'm like, let's, you know, I'll you know, save my evaluation a little bit for later, I guess. But this whole thing, just back to my target take of the week, which is, we all know a lot less than we think about this whole process and the sort of like horse race that it has become this time of year is kind of maddening to me.
I agree with you. Can we close out on this rather succinctly? But I would like to know, you are hiring a GM. What is or what are a few of the questions that you would ask either of him or like of someone else to try and identify the right candidate?
To me, it's just one question. How much of your own evaluation are you going to put into your decision making?
And the right answer is?
Almost none. Because it's just a hard job. Mm-hmm. I'll ask the same thing about a head coach. Because I think about, and he's not in the playoffs now, so whatever.
So, because it's interesting in that when you say your own evaluation, do you mean like this GM goes and sits in a dark room and watches film and then comes out?
Yeah, because to me it's fundamentally wasteful for a general manager to employ all these people and to get a humongous amount of data, whether you think it's the data we deal with or just data. I mean, information on players and information on free agents. And then to just put your thumb on the scale and be like, no, I actually, like, it was the Rick Smith thing where he was like, none of my scouts wanted Deshaun Watson, but I did. And it's like, that's not a, I think you think you sound smart, but you really don't. You just said you just wasted a ton of
yeah.
capital so, to make a decision you could have just made.
I'm going to take it a step further, which is I would ask them to describe how a draft pick is made or a decision is made.
Mm-hmm.
And my hypothesis, and this may anger some people, is that there's way too much spent on what you're talking about, which is like getting 45 different opinions that ultimately no one really weighs that much. I want someone to describe to me an evaluation process that actually makes sense. And that to me is where the general manager is valuable in saying, let's come together and let's identify the right process to try and pick the right player.
Yeah.
And I'm going to work with it. So I don't want the GM going off into a room and evaluating himself. I want him working with those teams that are tasked with identifying the right candidates based on the right metrics.
Yeah.
And that's what I'd want to hear from a GM.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like the problem is building the infrastructure to get you to the decision.
Yeah.
You should not be somebody who is building an one of those intermediate evaluations. In machine learning, you would say you're the prediction. You're not the features.
Yep.
Right? Like, you know, that's you shouldn't be tasked with building one of the features because you are also, you know, there's leakage there, right? And I think it's ultimately not healthy either, right? Because you need to have a process level view as a decision maker in the NFL. And if you're too personally attached to your decisions, then you are going to be bad at process level thinking. And so to me, I think that's, you know, why you have to have it like this. And I think at head coach, it's a little harder because the decisions you make are more snap judgment.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, when I look at John Harbaugh and the fact that he has Daniel Stern on the sideline telling him, you know, what the math says for every fourth down, like that's probably how it should be because John Harbaugh is, you know, not going to be able to compute the probabilities in his head, you know, and he maybe doesn't have the intuition there. If you delegate that, then you're better off at, you know, you're better at making decisions than having to spend time evaluating before you make the decision.
By the way, you mentioned we are hiring. If you are a data scientist, if you are a UI UX designer, if you are a UX researcher, if you're an engineer, front end, back end, if you love football, loving football is probably the least important of all of the things, but if you love football and you are one of those, or you're a great product manager or program manager, any of those things, let us know. Go to pff.com/jobs and you can apply or you can reply in the to the Twitter post of the podcast or whatever the hell it makes the most sense to you. But we'd love to hear from you and love for you to apply. Also, you can get 25% off any PFF subscription. That's both the Edge subscription, which costs just $40 for an entire year. That gives you all of the draft guides plus all of the great premium content at PFF. Promo code FORECAST, FORECAST, gets you 25% off. If you want all of the betting tools, all of the betting dashboards, the player props tool, the best bets tool, including all of the great stuff with the Edge subscription, you need an elite subscription, but you can get it for 25% off. So go use that promo code FORECAST, FORECAST. Also, if you're going to bet on the games, we're going to talk about how we would bet on all of these games. You should go to DraftKings and the DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NFL. Huge odds boost for new customers. Here's how it works. Use promo code PFF. And then new customers, when you sign up with that promo code, get 56-1 odds on any team. Bet just $5 and get $258 in free bets if you win. So you can pick, it's getting a little tricky, but you know, I don't know, maybe you pick the Packers, they have a big spread this week. And then let it ride. And with that promo code, get all of those free bets at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 or older, New Jersey, Indiana, Pennsylvania only. New customers are the only ones that are eligible. It's a minimum $5 deposit. $1 wager required, one per customer. Restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. All right, let's get into this. We've got two games Saturday and two games Sunday. Let's go in order. 4:30 on Saturday. Our Cincinnati Bengals are traveling to Nashville, Tennessee.
Spread on this game, Tennessee -3.5.
Bachelorette capital of the world.
Yeah, it is. A little cold this time of year for a bachelorette, but you know, you can make things happen. Total of 47. Give a little context to these teams. Tennessee Titans, 7th in our power ranking. Cincinnati Bengals are 10th. Each has a top 5 ranked offense in our opponent adjusted rankings, which I think a lot of people would be surprised by because they think the Titans have, you know, without Derrick Henry can't do anything. Joe Burrow, the better graded quarterback, 92.4 PFF grade compared to Ryan Tannehill's 83.6. Your thoughts?
Yeah, this is basically, I think this game comes down to two things, right? Comes down to how you think the Tennessee Titans attack the Bengals sort of injured front four, right? Mm-hmm. Larry Ogunjobi went out against the Raiders. They also have DJ Reader, who I believe is banged up, if not out already. Titans get Henry back. They get, you know, they're going to try to run the football, mm-hmm. you know, in this mm-hmm. game. And I think, you know, when this opened at 3, a lot of people were like, wait, that's not enough, right? Tennessee's mm-hmm. coming off a bye. You know, Cincinnati's coming off an emotional win. They've never had one before. And as much as Joe Burrow, you know, is a, you know, very, what is it? Encouraging as far, or, you know, as far as like, hey, this is just one game. You know, there's going to be probably a little bit of a letdown. But then I come back and say, okay, so that's an advantage for the Tennessee Titans, but the advantage for Cincinnati is, you know, Jackrabbit Jenkins is, you know, is coming back, but he's a little bit banged up. They don't have Caleb Farley. Haven't had him for a while. The secondary yep. for the Titans is Kevin Byard and, you know, a bunch of corners you don't really want to buy into. And the Bengals, Joe Burrow is playing as well as any quarterback in the NFL right now. And, you know, and those receivers can really make a defense look bad. So those are the two competing factors in this game.
DJ Reader, by the way, not on the injury report.
Oh, so is he?
Not on the injury report.
Yeah, he might be on. I kept hearing his name in reports and stuff.
Weather in this game is going to be 35 degrees, 3 mph winds, clear skies. So essentially the same set of conditions that the Bengals just played in. How much weight are you giving the teams that had the bye? What is that worth to you? Is that a point? Is that a half point?
I think it's a little bit more for Green Bay than it is for Tennessee.
Because of how strenuous the Niners.
Yeah, DJ Reader's going to be fine. Well, no, it's the Cincinnati and Tennessee are sort of in the same geographical region, right? There's research, you know, that if you are in a warmer climate is your ambient state and you go and play in a place like Green Bay, it affects you worse. And we talked about this on mm-hmm. Sunday with the thumb with Garoppolo and
the shoulder.
Yeah. And the shoulder and stuff like that as well. You know, I think that the bye is going to help Tennessee here by maybe a point.
Okay.
Whereas I think it's more like a point and a half, you know, San Francisco for one is playing Saturday after a mm-hmm. Sunday, mm-hmm. whereas That's here true. It's Saturday to Saturday. And, you know, and Tennessee doesn't have the biggest home field advantage. It, you know, doesn't have as good of a home field advantage, for example, as Green Bay, I would posit. So, to me, that's, you know, and then, so you look at our power rankings, you know, pff.com/betting/power rankings. You know, we would make, you know, Tennessee on a neutral about a half a point better, right? So you add to that the point there. And then, so that's 1.5 points. Then you're saying home field advantage is 2 and crossing 3 to get there, to get to 3.5. I think it's a bit much. I was saying
no, sir. No, siree, Bob.
I mean, Joe Burrow to me right now is.
By the way, the PFF power rankings tool available with an Edge subscription, I might add.
Yeah. Joe Burrow is the quarterback that I feel the most comfortable. Right. I feel very comfortable on him this weekend. Just like I think I know what I'm going to get against the Tennessee defense. I don't think Tennessee's going to force a ton of turnovers on him. I think he's going to, you know, he's not necessarily going to put up the greatest numbers because Zach Taylor likes to limit him a little bit too much for my liking. But I think his distribution is relatively narrow, especially considering he's just a second year player. I think he's going to play well.
As an underdog, I do think that as an underdog, the game script will favor him throwing more, which is a positive. I actually, I do, if I were going to bet this game, I would bet Cincinnati plus 3.5. But I actually think that the over 47 is where I would go. And one of the reasons I would go there is, look, the Bengals have a tremendous receiving core. They are in a situation where they are losing, they can put up points. But they also have, as you mentioned, a little bit of a banged up front. And A.J. Brown is a guy that, when fully rested, ain't nobody stopping A.J. Brown. And, you know, you've got Julio Jones there as well. And Ryan Tannehill, people look at his box score stats and go, this guy sucked. And he's a better player than that. So over 47 is my favorite.
Well, so bet here. here's the issue I have with the Titans and overs, though, right? Like, I saw, you know, we saw week 18 with Houston, that game went over. Some of the games, though, are like that 49ers game, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's just,
it's a grind.
That offense is a freaking grind. And mm-hmm. I get that Henry's coming back, but like, do they lean too much on him? Does it become too much of a slog?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
maybe.
I agree with you that both offenses are better. The weather shouldn't be too bad. It looks like about 40 with no wind, really. I can get on board with that. I still like, I like the Bengals better than I like the over.
The total.
But just because, that's just because I actually think the Bengals, like, obviously the defensive line's an issue. Linebacker mm-hmm. level is not great. I think their secondary is fine. I actually think their secondary will match up okay in this game.
Joe Burrow also the better quarterback getting points in that game. We move now to Saturday night. Finally. Troy.
It's to six now.
Troy Aikman gets his wish. He gets to watch he gets to call the 49ers game, which is
what he wanted last week. All yeah. along, yeah.
this is now
six. By the
six.
Way, people hated my take that Buck and Aikman was better than...
Yeah, but that just means you're right.
I know.
If you don't get a preponderance of people on Twitter saying you're wrong, then you aren't right. The so everything that I have gleaned is that Fred Warner with a low ankle sprain is going to play. That fact that it's a low ankle sprain, whether you believe that it's truly that or not, is a big deal. If it was a high ankle sprain and he was trying to play through that, may God bless you, you're screwed. So if you were thinking he's going to be 60%, maybe now he's like 85%. Nick Bosa, he has to get cleared through the Niners protocol and then cleared by an individual evaluator. I am going to go out on a limb and say that he gets cleared. So you have those two players playing. To me, the question is, do you believe that Jimmy Garoppolo has a hurt shoulder? Because if Jimmy Garoppolo has a hurt shoulder and they go into this game and they go, we're going to throw the ball five times to Jimmy G.
It's over.
It's over. It is
and
over.
And by the way, this is a team in early down pass rates, the second lowest early down pass rate behind Tennessee. Tennessee runs the ball more than and the Niners run the ball more than they pass it on early downs in early games, yeah. Early part of games.
And they're playing a Packers team that is first in our offensive power rating. What's interesting is that the Packers also average, which this is one of my favorite stats of the week. The Packers actually are more efficient running the ball than the Niners. And I'm sure people would be completely like just startled by that. And, you know, I'm sure they're going to put my hypothesis is that this is going to be a Deebo Samuel, George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, Kyle Shanahan. Like they're going to come around the campfire. Mm-hmm. They're going to smoke the stuff that makes you imagine beautiful things. And then they're going to go. Everything they've ever dreamt is going to show up in this game because they can't win this if they go, Jimmy G's going to line up. We're going to run a couple of basic run schemes and then Jimmy's going to deliver some throws.
49ers this year lead the league on early downs. Sorry, it's not even early downs. It's just every play. In plays that we have marked trick or trick look, 18.1%. Second in the NFL is the Los Angeles Rams. Interestingly, Tampa Bay's last. Brady doesn't want any of that smoke.
Doesn't
around
need
when
that
he,
shit.
When he gets around. San Francisco, interestingly, when you look at it, like I said, second lowest early down pass rate, but they are not among one of the teams that has, so like, for example, Chiefs and Bucks are the top two in terms of early down pass rate. But when you look at, for example, their, you know, the box counts faced, you know, Kansas City faces the lightest box in the league. the Niners have one of the heaviest, you know, run, you know, schemes in the league, but they don't face one of the top box counts in the league, which means whatever they're doing is forcing other teams to be a little passive in their run game.
Well, what it is that they run motion more than any other team. And so they are moving people all over the place. You think that the Niners cover this game, the reason you do is that you believe that Kyle Shanahan is going to be... So a couple weeks ago, he drove Sean McVay to the stadium, right? As his dad, he had a legal guardian. He had to drive him to the stadium. In this game, what you believe is that Kyle Shanahan is actually up. He's not on the field for this game. He's up at the top of the stadium, and he's got
magical.
He's got puppet strings on the defenders of the Packers, and he's just moving them into the wrong gap every time. And we've seen him doing that. We have seen him do that before. Here's my issue, and here's why. Even at six, I just can't.
I can't get there with the Niners.
I can't. And the biggest thing is this: the biggest mismatch in this game. And it may be the biggest mismatch in the entire playoffs left is Davante Adams versus Ambry Thomas or Emmanuel Mosley or whoever the freaking hell you put on him. In that week three matchup, he had 18 targets. 52% of the targets went to Davante Adams. And guess what? They couldn't stop him. 140 yards or something like that on that last drive, he totally took over. That I just can't get away from the image of that working all the time. And if there is, the other thing is with Bosa, because it's a Saturday game, the chances of him not getting cleared are higher. And for the Niners, that's their biggest mismatch is Nick Bosa just destroying Billy Turner. And there's a chance that's not as effective. So the spread in this one, as much as I wanted to like the Niners plus six, I just, it's tough. And I don't know if I could play the spread either way.
I have. Couple positions on this game. We had the -4.5. Actually, we printed 5.5 with Green Bay the Monday morning. I did take some Niners +6.5 just to kind of get off this game because I just don't. I think LaFleur is a great coach. Mm-hmm. He might not necessarily be as good as Shanahan in the minds of many or whatever. But to me, there's that. There's also the fact that Rodgers, you know, has the San Francisco, California history. He's also got the fact that like he could have been the guy for the Niners, like all this kind of stuff. I just think Rodgers, especially in this game, it just feels like a game Rodgers throws 5 touchdowns in and then he melts down in the NFC title game against whoever they play. But this game feels like the game that he's just going to punch the hell out of the team in front of him. And
if you, I'm going to steal your line from last week and it worked well last week. If you believe that Jimmy G is healthy enough to keep this game within six, bet the Niners to win.
Yeah, bet the Niners to win.
Because if that's the case, then Kyle Shanahan's wizardry could really work. And it could be a really close game down to the end, and the Niners have a chance to win, and you'd rather have a +210 ticket at that point.
I was describing Jimmy G to a friend today. I was saying...
handsome.
Of course, but I was also, so Jimmy G, everybody talks about how much better Shanahan would do with like a Cousins or a Carr or whatever the hell. And I actually disagree.
Oh God.
Here's my point about Jimmy G.
I did not sign up for this.
Jimmy G throws what Kyle Shanahan calls. He reads what's on the teleprompter. He's Ron Burgundy. And like that, and because he's not like a perfect quarterback. That's why you see interceptions. That's why you see the throw to Ayuk. But you know what Jimmy G doesn't do that I actually find endearing? He doesn't need eight, want to. He doesn't check bullshit down. And so this is my case for the Niners. If Kyle calls a brilliant game, Jimmy's going to throw it.
And the question is...
Is he capable of it?
Is he capable of it? Because I agree. If Jimmy's healthy, if you know... By the way, if you're out there... We have a lot of listeners in San Francisco Bay Area. If you find out, can you let me know if Jimmy's healthy?
But you know what I mean? And like then, if Derek Carr's in this offense, I think...
Please no. Please.
He's going to check it down on third and long, right?
You know what Jimmy G does do?
Oh, Manscaped, I would imagine.
You're good. You're too good now. You know where I'm going with that. But I thought that was a nice little lead there, you know, a little tie-in.
Jimmy you really G, let in with that.
Jimmy G is not going out of his home without looking fantastic all over. And that means that I'm guessing, I don't know this for a fact, but I'm guessing a man that handsome is someone that uses the Manscaped Lawnmower 4.0. Use promo code PFF at manscaped.com and get 20% off plus free shipping any order, including the Performance Package 4.0, which includes the Ultra Premium Body Wash. Again, I haven't used it yet. I'll let you know when I do. I'm just going to stop talking about it. What I do use is the Lawnmower 4.0, just like Jimmy G, keeps you feeling good, looking good. And if your shoulder works, playing well as well. So use promo code PFF. Go get yourself cleaned up.
I can't believe you, pro Jimmy G, up in the office back before renovations 4 years ago.
Yeah.
Praising, calling him the
second
stone
coming.
The stone that was rejected became the cornerstone.
Yep.
And I tried to flatter Jimmy G because, look, like the stats aren't good, right? Like, well, his EPA and stuff is good, but the underlying stuff is not good. We don't think Jimmy's a great quarterback.
No.
But I want to explain why they get production out of him, because they do get, he's second in yards per attempt. He's like third in the EPA CPOE composite. The reason is Jimmy reads what's on the teleprompter. Whereas Kirk Cousins, Derek Carr, those guys like read what's, and they're like, I can't swear, you know, like, and they, so they check it down.
The problem is that Jimmy G makes one heinous throw every single game.
But that's just you and I golfing.
Right.
Like, because we can't hit it straight.
But that's
consistently.
I mean, but here's the thing. If Jimmy G were like a fourth round pick who stayed with the Patriots and was playing for the Patriots right now, they'd be like, great. But the fact that he was the chip that could not be moved for Tom Brady, it puts a little different lens on it. By the way, my official stance on Jimmy G is this. Jimmy G is one of my favorite people in the NFL. That does not mean I have to like him as a quarterback. Okay? A lot of respect for Jimmy G. let's go to Sunday. Sunday, the final Sunday night NBC game before the Super Bowl, which will be on NBC, in case you didn't know, on February 13th. Rams Bucks, a rematch of a week 3 game again, where the Bucks lost 34-24. It was an interesting game in that the Bucks lost Jamel Dean in that game, and also did not have Antonio Brown, who they will not have here. They will also not have Chris Godwin, who played in that game and actually went 5-for-5 against Jalen Ramsey. One of the better performances against Ramsey that we have seen, will not be playing in this game. The spread on this game is Tampa Bay -3.
It's going to get to 2.5.
It's going
to
be 2.5. Total 48.5. This is interesting. I looking at some of the data, I thought this stuck out to me. In our opponent adjusted power rankings, the Rams are 11th in offense and the Bucks are second. Tom Brady, even though I think people will look at it and go, Matt Stafford's had just as good of a year, Tom Brady has a nearly 10-point advantage on him from a grading perspective. I am waiting until this gets to 2.5, but if it's 2.5, that's the play.
I told, and again, people remember when you talk shit about their team, because like people,
yeah, well, they got nothing else to
do. All up in my business about the Rams beating the Cardinals.
I hope you use Manscaped.
Yeah, well, the ball deodorant is big, you know.
Very important.
I'm actually very like thoughtful when they're all up in, and I you know,
very thoughtful. Thought leader.
But what's happening here with this line? I know I got it wrong on Sunday, like Monday morning, like
egregiously wrong.
But at the same time, like, so Tristan Wirfs is out, right? Or Tristan Wirfs is injured. He might play, right?
He might play, and I think Whitworth also might play, but both are questionable.
Both are questionable, and both players are extremely good, right? I feel like everybody's rushing to the Wirfs thing when they should be focused on the Whitworth thing. Right, we've seen.
Yeah. Okay. Yes and no, though, because we actually saw Von Miller look like an NFL player of late, and that is a Von Miller
90 PFF grade Von Miller against even Tristan Wirfs at like 80%, that worries me.
Yeah, but have we – so here's my broad take. I'll get through it quickly. I think that Tom Brady, in a game when a guy gets hurt, is not going to be as effective at mitigating pressure and things like that as Tom Brady with a week to prepare for a weaker offensive line and knowing full well it doesn't get by us. It doesn't get by Brady, right? Like this thing, Tom Brady knows who he's up against. The history of the Rams' struggles on offense with McVay have always been because the offensive line stopped performing well, right?
Correct.
And that was 2019. That was 2020 to a lesser extent. And Noteboom at left tackle is just like the, because look, I do agree that the Rams' defensive components are better. But like when you go with Joe Tryon, Troy Nika, you have Jason Pierre-Paul, you have Vita Vea, and you have Shaq Barrett, like that's no joke.
No.
Right? And when you take away the best offensive lineman from that group, again, we're talking about what happened in the Super Bowl last year, right? And I think people are always pricing in, the Bucs are without their number two receiver. Well, so are the Rams, right? And the Bucs have injuries in the secondary. Jordan Fuller is hurt, right? And they're playing Eric Weddle back there, right? And so, again, I think my reasoning going back to week three was, Tampa Bay is a 1.5-point favorite in that game. And obviously we've gotten to see the whole season play out. But like as of week three, I mean, I guess Stafford had kind of a bad game against the Colts in week two, but for the most part, like the shine was still on Stafford in LA. We know what his issues are. And they I'm not gonna ding his performance against Arizona, but they kind of hit him a little bit, right? Like they ran the football. And running the football, by the way, is not gonna be as easy this week against Vita Vea and those guys. Stafford is going to have to throw. And I know Cooper Kupp is great, and I know Odell Beckham Jr. has added stuff for that team. But are we it doesn't add up to me. I think the Bucs are the side here, and I think we're just bored. I think we're bored with Tom Brady, and that's why the market
This is my take as well. We are underestimating how freaking good Tom Brady is, and I can't believe it. I feel like such a loser even saying that. But it's interesting. The Rams offensive line does not have a player with a PFF grade below 69. Pretty impressive. And Whitworth is their highest graded. He is their highest graded offensive lineman, but also 85 PFF grade at left tackle. That's important, as you mentioned. But you look at the Rams defense, and everyone gets excited about them. The Bucs defense is also very sound, especially on the backside. And this game is going to be played in Tampa Bay, not in Los Angeles, at noon West Coast time. And I think we're underestimating Tom Brady here. So I'm waiting for it to get to 2.5. And when it's 2.5, I am betting.
Apparently, so what has happened to the weather in this game? So Tampa Bay, because like our model has shifted a little bit. I think part of it's the Whitworth injury, where it became a little bit apparent in some of our feeds that he was not necessarily.
So 58, 14 mile per hour.
Wins. Yeah, I mean, so that's an issue. Like, so I don't know if I have an opinion on the total. I think this is a game where, 48.5 is probably right. We do show a small edge on the under, but.
Okay. Before we get to the best game of the weekend. I was going to say second best, but I'll give it to you. It's the best game of the weekend. If you want to prepare yourself the best way possible for the big game on February 13th, you should go to westernsouthern.com/feast, because there you can enter to win a $2,500 ultimate feast brought to you by Western Southern, our financial advisors. And the way you do that is by going to that address, westernsouthern.com/feast, and asking Chris Collinsworth a question. You can ask him anything you need to know about your financial future. You can ask him about the booth on Sunday Night Football, whatever the hell it is. And when you do, you are entered for a chance to win that catered feast. So go to westernsouthern.com/feast. Go check out Chris's podcast on YouTube, and you will be able to see if your question gets answered while also potentially making your, I was going to say the words, I can't legally say them, your big game really, really special.
Speaking of big game.
Buffalo, Kansas City. The Kansas City Chiefs are, for the first time in the Patrick Mahomes playoff era, less than a 2.5 point favorite. They're a 1.5 point favorite. Right. To the Bills at home, the Bills beat the brakes off of the Chiefs in week 5, 38-20. Now, that was an interesting point in the Chiefs' season. They lost to the Bills. They lost to the Titans 27-3 just a couple weeks later. They beat the Giants by 3 points in week 8. Which was
well, and then the next week they barely beat the Packers with Jordan Love, yep. And then it was
an interesting time.
It was part of the journey.
Yeah, an interesting time the season here. 54.5 is the total. Okay, here's what I'm going to ask. First thing, what's the difference of quarterback in this game? Points wise,
half a point.
Mahomes, but you're giving Mahomes the edge here. He is graded worse than Josh Allen this year. Why are you giving him the edge in this game?
Because if you take the average of the last, you know, since those two started starting games, like Mahomes is much better. Even if you look at the last 2 years, it's closer. But also, I mean, both guys statistically have regressed this year. Mm-hmm. Like that's, you know, there's no mistake about it. I think it's just about priors for me. I mean, Mahomes is the best player in the league, in my opinion. And I think if you add up war, actually Tom Brady eclipsed him. But if you look since they both started games, Mahomes is the second most valuable player in football. And, you know, I think that jives, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Mahomes is probably the second best player in the NFL behind Brady. As old as Brady is. I've been saying this week. I do think that if Buffalo plays their best game and the Chiefs play their best game, Buffalo wins this game. Because I think Buffalo's defense is something like 12 touchdowns and 19 interceptions in the regular season. Some absurd yards per attempt amount. Their defense is great. And when you look at, you know, their top five, so this is the matchup I want people to see. So the Kansas City Chiefs are the only team in the NFL who have a contested target rate of under 10%. So when Mahomes throws the ball, Chiefs receivers are contested less than 10% of the time. Buffalo contests 18.5% of opposing throws. By the way, your 49ers, fourth at 18.8. So the Buffalo Bills are fifth best at contesting targets. That to me is the real thing. You know, Tre'Davious White's out. You know, the Bills have done a masterful job at times. They run that zone. Mm-hmm. White takes one side. Some schmuck like Josh Norman or Vontae Davis or Levi Wallace takes the other side. And including last game between the two. And now you have kind of two corners that are kind of suspect, right? I think if both teams play their average game, the Chiefs win. Like, that's the difference in this game. I think Mahomes' average water level is better than Josh Allen's, but I could be convinced that when Buffalo puts it all together, there's not a better team in the NFL.
I don't want to be this guy, but can we not overreact to the Bills beating?
Well, we've been doing that all year, though. We've been saying that, though, right? We've been looking like our thesis this year has been, When the Bills lose to the Jags, we all dismiss it. Mm-hmm. And then when they beat a team, teams breaks off like they did last week, like, oh, that's who that team is. They mm-hmm. fulfilled their destiny, right? And we forget that the Bills were trailing at home to the Falcons in week 17. They were up only 13-10 to the Jets in week 8. That's my point. I'm like, I said, I think the Bills' average game is worse than the Chiefs' average game.
Yeah.
I just think when they put it all together – when you look at what Buffalo's put together, right? Hyde, Poyer, a defensive front that there's no brilliant player there, but they're all good. Mm-hmm. Linebacker level's okay. And then, you know, on the offensive side of the ball, Diggs, Knox, Cole Beasley, Gabriel Davis, Emmanuel Sanders, you know, and an offensive line that's average. And then Devin Singletary has added something in the last few weeks. Like, whereas the Chiefs are very concentrated, right? They're concentrated on an offensive line that's pretty good. Mahomes, who's great, Kelce and Hill, and then praying for rain with Hardman and Pringle and those guys.
I will say this. If I had to bet one side of this, I would certainly bet Kansas City minus 0.5.
But so total 54.5, but our models would lean under there. I just don't see Buffalo getting blown out in this game. That's something I do not see.
Yeah. Somebody asked me a good question. I think it was our friend Seren Petro. By the way, so last week we did the live watch along San Francisco, Dallas, also Arizona, LA. We are doing the live watch along during Buffalo.
Oh no.
Buffalo, and Kansas City.
Wow.
I hope that we can get George to call in now that we have that capability.
Let's do it.
Here's an interesting thing. Over the last, and this is largely because the Bills are always ahead. And there are games like the Tampa Bay game. Josh Allen has 2 fourth-quarter comebacks the last 2 years. Again, most of that is because the Bills are always ahead.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But we've seen, the 2 times the Chiefs have beaten Buffalo in the last calendar year plus, it was Chiefs get out ahead. Yep. Josh Allen struggled to come back. He was under 7 yards of pass attempt in both of those games. Now, I don't think our listeners are smart enough. You don't have to say, okay, what happened in week 5 is not exactly going to happen in week 19 here or 8 or 20 here. But I'll just say the Chiefs were without Tre'Davious Ward. They're without Chris Jones. Yep. They were without Melvin Ingram.
Yes.
Daniel Sorensen was starting over Juan Thornhill.
It's a totally different game. It's a totally different team. I'm glad you brought that point. That was something that I actually had in my notes and just forgot. Like, that was what... The combination of, we just watched Buffalo have the most impressive performance. It was against the Patriots. Let's give them all the credit for the performance. Let's not assume that that's sustainable. Like, Josh Allen was throwing the ball away on that first drive that turned into a touchdown. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all you need to know about that game. This is not at home in those conditions. This is in Kansas City against a team that's dramatically different than the team that you beat the brakes off of. And everyone is betting on the Bills. 80% of the cash on the Bills. So the people that matter are putting their money on the Bills. I love nothing more than fading the sharps in spots like this. But I do like the Bills as a teaser leg. If I had to bet one side of this, I'd bet Kansas City.
Leg is tough because of the total. But the total has gone down at least a half a point recently.
And here's another bet that I love in this revenge game. Is Patrick Mahomes over 2.5 passing touchdowns, +112. Go check out the PFF Best Bets tool and you can
That's kind of where I want to talk to, because let's be honest here.
Mm-hmm. Honesty is good, as is humility.
I don't think you're like, so again, sides and totals in NFL are tough to beat. And I think, especially when there's only 4, and especially when we know this much about every team, blah blah blah. Isn't the pick of the week pretty easy? Isn't it just Pat? 2.5. Because
I'm here for Pat. I am.
Because again, none of these things matter. That when people say things like this again, like they're just trying to have fun. We're just trying to have fun as far as with narratives and stuff. Pat's only 2 postseason losses in his career were Tom Brady teams. Like this, like Pat, how ornery was Pat in the second quarter of that Steelers game? Because I bet over 200. So like this is my journey.
Hmm.
I was up a little bit last week. So going into Sunday Night Football, I said, okay, I'm going to be fun. I'm going to bet Chiefs -7.5 first half. I'm going to bet Chiefs over 14.5 first half. I'm going to bet Patrick Mahomes over 2.5 touchdowns.
That did well.
6 minutes left in the first half. Steelers are up 7-0. All those bets are dead,
mm-hmm.
except for maybe the Pat touchdown one. But those first half bets are donezo.
All done.
And they scored. Patrick Mahomes threw 5 touchdowns in 10 minutes of NFL of game time. And those 10 minutes included the Pittsburgh Steelers having the ball 4 times.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, I mean, the Steelers suck. Yes, I agree with you. I also love TB12. Over 2.5 at +144. But I'm here to rock with you on Mahomes. Let's get it. I'm also out of pure love for the game to make Kirk Herbstreit happy. I'm betting every game this week. I just am. I fucking love the divisional round.
Yeah, of course. It's the best round of the season.
It is so great. So I'm betting them all.
And I'm going to bet all the props as well.
Don't you think here, just to briefly, especially in the AFC, this is the two best teams, right? The market has spoken. The Bills and the Chiefs, even though they literally face each other this week and one has to be eliminated, are the two favorites in the AFC.
Yeah.
This is the AFC championship.
One of these teams could be winning by 20 next week. You know, even though we saw the Bengals beat the Chiefs. I know. I get it. Shit changes.
Yeah.
Like, that happens.
Also, Ron Torbert is not going to be able to call every single.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the NFC, oh my God. We could do a whole nother podcast on like the combination of matchups there. Mm-hmm. Like, first off, if the Rams win, the Niners have a path to the Super Bowl.
It goes through so high.
I'm just saying, dude. That's the case.
If the Niners win Saturday,
that's maybe why Tom Brady over 2.5 can't be the lock of the week. Because if the Niners win Saturday, I'm gonna dress up as a Ram.
Yeah, yeah. You're gonna be part of the Ram-O-League.
Yeah, exactly.
We are Ram-O-League.
That's our podcast. We love you. Thanks for hanging out. See you Sunday night.